I'm Veronica Dudo. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, the ceasefire begins as thousands of Palestinians return to Gaza. We look ahead to what happens next.
These children are often in a state of anxiety 24/7, ready to run.
On the ground in Ukraine, EWTN brings you the story of the children kidnapped by Russia. We'll show you how the Order of Malta is trying to help. And a big win for the church, the good news out of Washington State about the Seal of Confession. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump's plan for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip goes into effect. The deal raises hopes for ending the Israel-Hamas war. The remaining hostages are set to be released within days. The U.S. will send about 200 troops to Israel as part of a broader international team to support and monitor the ceasefire deal. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
The U.S. will also lead a massive, internationally funded reconstruction effort. But big questions remain over who will govern Gaza and whether Hamas will disarm.
As President Donald Trump heads off to Walter Reed in Maryland for what he calls a semi-annual physical, across the globe, the initial phases of his peace plan begin taking shape. A ceasefire, Israeli troops pulling back, and tens of thousands of Palestinians headed back home, or to what remains.
Reset! Reset! Off!
Today at the Pentagon, the Secretary of War thanking Qatar's Minister of Defense for helping push for peace.
A historic moment. No one other than President Trump could have achieved the peace that what we believe will be a lasting peace in Gaza. And Qatar played a substantial role from the beginning, working with our folks to ensure that came about. So I want to thank you for that historic peace.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu also thanking President Trump.
I wish to thank President Trump for his global leadership and his tireless efforts in formulating the plan for the release of the hostages. Once again, he has demonstrated his great friendship toward our people and our nation.
In Tel Aviv, Israelis rejoicing as the struggle to free captives held in Gaza appears to finally be coming to a close. The father of one hostage describes a mixed bag of emotions, including
excitement that finally, you know, many of us will be able to see our loved ones, anticipation that indeed, you know, there's a better future waiting around the corner. But also there's an anxiety aspect.
Just yesterday, President Trump emphasizing to reporters in the cabinet room his top priority.
But we have to get our hostages back, and we weren't going to do it at the end. We're going to do it at the beginning.
Separately tonight, but making big news, President Donald Trump now says he may not meet with China's president later this month. That's because China restricted exports of rare earths. In return, in response, President Trump saying the U.S. might increase tariffs on China, and that sent stocks tumbling today. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Daniel Ayalon is a former Israeli ambassador to the United States and a former foreign policy advisor to Benjamin Netanyahu. He joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you, Veronica. Good to be with you.
So Israel approved the ceasefire, yet Palestinians reported heavy shelling Friday morning in northern Gaza. What are your thoughts on the timing, and possibly was it meant as a final message to Hamas before the ceasefire took effect?
Well, first of all, we have had enough experience with the Hamas that even though they agree on ceasefire, they continue their aggression. In the last rounds, 2014, we agreed on a ceasefire, and right after the ceasefire, they killed two of our soldiers and snatched one of the bodies of Lieutenant Goldin, which is still there in their possession, unfortunately. So there was a threat that the IDF depicted, and they had to take care of it. But, you know, we Israel adheres to the agreement and to the ceasefire terms, you know, to the spirit and to the letter. And we started right on time, and we are now back of the former position, and hopefully we'll see the next stage where we will see our hostages within the next 72 hours.
President Trump's administration brokered several agreements in the past, but a peace deal between Israel and Hamas would be unprecedented. How did this agreement come about, and what factors made it possible now?
Well, first of all, I think that we should all acknowledge the leadership and the negotiation capabilities of President Trump and his team. And I believe that they found the right moment to really bring together an assembly of protagonists in the region that could really be instrumental, namely Turkey, Qatar, and Egypt, that put a lot of pressure on Hamas that was not there before. At the same time, they made sure to alleviate any concerns from Israel from this ceasefire. And the 20 points or 21 points plan, I think, was put forth as a leave it, take it or leave it. So no more extra negotiations. And I think that kind of did the trick. Everybody agreed and also agreed to commit to make sure that, for instance, in the case of Turkey and Qatar and in Egypt, to make sure that the Hamas will not breach the agreement.
Now, this is being described as phase one of the ceasefire deal. Can you tell us a little bit more about phase two? What comes next?
So right after we get our hostages, we release Palestinian terrorists in our jails. Many of them have really blood on their hands, but, you know, we committed, so we will have to do that. Then there will be a further redeployment or withdrawal of the Israeli, of IDF, to a positions which will allow the Gazan people to go back to all their places they have been there before. And then comes a very important part, which is disarming the Hamas. And for that, also, the American leadership here was very instrumental, and they committed to send American personnel, which will not be in Gaza, will be outside of Gaza, but they will oversee a an international peacekeeping force.
Well, the whole world is certainly watching. Daniel Aiello, thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you, Veronica.
The ceasefire deal is also bringing hope to the only Catholic church in Gaza, where the war has been experienced firsthand. Back in July, the church was hit by an Israeli tank, killing three people. And last month, despite evacuation orders and escalating military operations across Gaza, the staff insisted on staying to care for displaced residents sheltering at the church. That parish is part of the Latin Patriarchate of Jerusalem. Joining us now is Fareed Joubran, the Public and Governmental Affairs Advisor for the Latin Patriarchate of Jerusalem. What's your reaction to the news of this historic ceasefire?
Our initial reaction was surprise because it happened so fast, the declaration. We anticipated that, but not so quickly. Joy for the entire population of Gaza, for the families of the hostages. And for our parish, our little parish there in Gaza, and mostly expectation, because many, many things remain unclear, and we will need to wait and see what happens.
Has Cardinal Pizzaballa spoken with the pastor, Father Gabriel Romanelli?
Yes, he speaks with him on a daily basis. He spoke to him. He could hear the relief in his voice. And again, the expectation. They are all very happy that they are not hearing more bombings. They expect a better future, but still they wait to see what is going to happen. As I said, there is a lot of uncertainty. They are all waiting to see what happens after the release of the hostages.
Now, more than 2 million Palestinians have been displaced by the war, and most of the territory's infrastructure has been destroyed. Many have begun the journey home. From a humanitarian aspect, what do you think will happen to them?
We saw some clips on various channels today on our various media outlets. People will go back to a almost total destruction. But from what we know and what we see and what we saw today, the people are very resilient. They are very happy for the ceasefire, and they are very looking forward to start rebuilding.
As you mentioned, there's a lot of moving parts from a diplomatic and political aspect. What role will the Catholic Church have in helping the region?
The Catholic Church, as the Patriarch, as the Pope, as many said, will give anything in its power to bridge, to offer assistance, to offer its good services when it's asked to do so. We have been very active in the matters of delivering aid during the toughest time in Gaza, delivering aid to a lot of people in Gaza, not only to our parish. So the Latin Patriarchate and the local church have big plans for Gaza. We just announced the creation of a new hospital in the southern area. We'll have more details on that. That will be supported by the Italian Conference of Catholic Bishops and the Latin Patriarchate. We are planning to do to create field hospitals in several places, and to work on schools and education for the children, not only for the Christian community, for everyone.
Definitely a lot of hope moving forward. Fareed Joubran, thank you so much.
Thank you, Veronica.
New tonight, the Trump administration has begun firing federal workers as the government shutdown reaches its 10th day. The Office of Management and Budget Director Russell Vogt made the announcement today on X. As of right now, it's not clear how many workers have been let go, and there's still no end in sight to the shutdown.
You have 2 million federal civilian workers and 1.3 million active duty military service members who are now going to be harmed. You also have Veterans Health Services and nutrition programs for young mothers and infants. They're all being stalled.
Shame on the Democrats. Shame on the Democrats for doing this to the American people. I mean, look at that. Really? Every day gets better for us? Every day gets better for us. That's their thought about what this shutdown means.
But some Republicans aren't happy with their leaders and blame them for the shutdown.
I'm actually putting the blame on the Speaker and Leader Thune in the Senate. This should not be happening. And I don't think, look, as a member of Congress, we already have a low enough job approval rating. This shutdown is just going to drive everybody's approval rating that much lower.
And things turned personal in the hallways of the Capitol. There were confrontations, finger-pointing, and shouting matches between lawmakers.
Listen, you're not going to talk to me and talk
and
over me
New York residents
because you don't want to hear what I have to say.
Freshman Senator John Husted says he has seen enough.
Everybody's playing games. They're out there filming videos, swearing, trying to look tough by using cuss words. I mean, like, literally, this is ridiculous. We all look ridiculous when that kind of stuff happens. And they should just, instead of yelling at each other, just get the government open.
Democrats say it's time for Republicans to get serious about opening the government.
Let's have a conversation so we can find a bipartisan path forward to do the things that are necessary in a spending agreement to actually improve the quality of life of the American people and address the health care crisis that they've created.
It's a really easy solution here that's within grasp if the comparatively small amount of funding is guaranteed by Republicans so that health care is affordable for millions and millions of people, most especially in those red states. The Republicans are shortchanging their own constituents.
House Speaker Mike Johnson says he won't bring the House back into session until Senate Democrats vote to open the government. There are no talks currently planned to break the impasse. A lot of tension marked the first and only debate between the candidates for Virginia governor, Democrat Abigail Spanberger, and Republican Winsome Earle Sears. The two candidates battled over abortion, transgender issues, and controversy involving violent text messages sent in 2022 by the Democratic nominee for attorney general. In the messages which he sent to a Republican state lawmaker, Jay Jones talks about shooting former Virginia House Speaker Todd Gilbert. Earl Sears pressed Spanberger after she refused to call for Jones to drop out of the race.
You have little girls. What would it take him pulling the trigger? Is that what would do it? And then you would say he needs to get out of the race? Abigail, you have nothing to say? Abigail, what if he said it about your three children? Is that when you would say he should get out of the race, Abigail?
Spanberger leads the race for governor in most every poll. Virginia's election will be held on November 4th. Turning now to Memphis, where National Guard troops are patrolling for the first time as part of President Donald Trump's federal task force. Mayor Paul Young, a Democrat, says he never requested for the Guard to come to his city. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee says troops will not make arrests and will not be armed unless local law enforcement officials request it. This comes as U.S. senators are denied entrance to immigration facility outside of Chicago. There, soldiers are engaged in planning and training after a judge handed a loss to the Trump administration and blocked National Guard deployment to the Chicago area. Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado is this year's recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. She is honored for her brave fight to restore democracy in a country gripped by authoritarian rule.
As the leader of the democratic forces in Venezuela, Maria Corina Machado is one of the most extraordinary examples of civilian courage in Latin America in recent times. Ms. Machado has been a key unifying figure in a political opposition that was once deeply divided.
She remains in hiding today and has not been publicly seen since January. Machado was barred from running against socialist dictator Nicolas Maduro in last year's election. Her replacement, Edmund Gonzalez, is now in exile in Spain. She is the 20th woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize out of 112 individuals who've received the honor. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including Rescue Operation. In Ukraine, we give you an inside glimpse at the organization that goes behind enemy lines to save children taken by Russians. And a big win for the confessional, details of the landmark settlement reached in Washington. Welcome back. Ukrainian officials say Russia is carrying out a massive attack on its energy infrastructure. Parts of the capital city of Kyiv were left without power this morning. Russia started targeting energy facilities late last month, with Ukraine saying they've experienced attacks almost daily. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the country is determined to protect its energy sector as winter approaches. So far, he says they've been successful in stopping some of the attacks. The White House seeks to make more inroads with Russia in an effort to release abducted Ukrainian children. First Lady Melania Trump revealed she's been communicating with Russian President Vladimir Putin about the reunification of children. She says they are living in turmoil because of the war in Ukraine.
As First Lady, this is an important initiative for me. It is built on shared purpose and lasting impact.
The First Lady says 8 children have already been reunited with their families, and she's working on the release of young adults who were first abducted as kids. EWTN News has been following the plight of children in Ukraine and the hardships they've endured since the start of the war. Our Vatican correspondent Valentina Di Donato gives us an up-close view of the situation and the Catholic organization that's helping.
Since the start of the full invasion of the war, Russian authorities have removed children from Ukraine with the aim to turn them against their homeland. EWTN got access inside the largest rescue operation of abducted children. This organization is entering occupied territories and traveling to the front line to save these missing children.
Believe me, you never have seen this before.
This is one of those buses that help rescue thousands of children, bringing them to safety.
Every day we are rescuing kids and their relatives from danger. And this is very unique bus. We have several buses like this. It's sixth class of protection. It's fully armored. And we use this bus when war happened for mass evacuation of children, and thousands of kids were saved through these buses. But now, because Russian drones in war zones, and you cannot come closer than 20 kilometers to front line because it's so dangerous.
Mykola Kuluba was formerly commissioner of the president of Ukraine for children's rights, but now runs Save Ukraine, the largest organization rescuing abducted children. But who are these children? Many will not speak on camera for their safety and because of the severe trauma they have endured. But these twin brothers, Kirlo and Danilo, have shared everything together. And now they recount how they survived being kidnapped by Russian soldiers.
We were forced to have Russian passports and documents, to sign military documents. There was an incident during elections. Russian soldiers put guns to our heads to force us to sign to vote.
Just a few years ago, they were rescued by Save Ukraine, and for now they live here and receive psychological support as they reintegrate. The Order of Malta helps fund the return to normalcy of these boys and girls at Save Ukraine, as well as the psychological support they provide. Alessa is the boys' case manager and psychologist. She and her child were also rescued by Save Ukraine, while the Russians occupied her hometown outside of Kyiv. Like all of the case managers here, she knows what these boys and girls have experienced firsthand.
There are many cases of children that arrive here that refuse to take off their clothes, their shoes. They're terrified and not trusting adults. These children are often in a state of anxiety 24/7, ready to run. And part of our work is to help build the trust of these children again.
In March 2023, the International Criminal Court charged Russian President Vladimir Putin for the war crime of the unlawful deportation of children and unlawful transfer of children from occupied areas of Ukraine to Russia. But the International Criminal Court is not recognized by a handful of nations. The United States, Russia, China, India, Turkey, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Iran. Which is why Putin was able to recently meet President Donald Trump in Alaska. That flight route enabled him to avoid the airspace of any country that could attempt to arrest him. But the rights of the most vulnerable, children, have been compromised, Mykola Kuluba tells us.
After occupation of territories, and they have no any rights, nobody come to them and ask, please, what do you want, to stay here under Russian control and a Russian regime or Russian authorities, or leave these territories? You will be arrested, interrogated, and you could be jailed for years. That's why when we asking if children have a choice, no, they have no choice, they have no rights, that it's only one thing could happen. They want escape of that, to leave Russia, to leave occupied territories, but Russia banning their escape.
Pope Leo XIV's first meeting as pontiff was with Ukrainian President Zelensky, where they discussed the return of Ukrainian children abducted by Russia and joint efforts towards peace. The Vatican and its humanitarian channels have helped rescue nearly 300 children from the occupied areas, but the people in Ukraine are still desperate for more to be done to save their children. But what these children tell us they want most is a home and safety. Like any child, in fact, all of the drawings that the rescued children make have one thing in common. They all draw houses that they dream to live in once again. In Kyiv, Ukraine, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, confession protection. The big legal win announced today in Washington State. It's a big win for the Catholic Church in Washington, where the state has agreed not to force Catholic priests to violate the seal of confession. Earlier this year, Washington's mandatory reporting law added clergy to the list of mandatory abuse reporters in the state. However, it did not include an exemption for information learned in the confessional. The state's bishops successfully blocked the law in federal court in July, but the state appealed. Today, a motion filed in court affirmed that state and local governments would stop attempting to force priests to break the seal. In Rome, Pope Leo XIV spoke about the important relationship between journalists and news consumers. The two-day Minds Conference wrapped up today. In a private meeting with participants, the Holy Father expressed his desire for greater collaboration between producers and consumers of news content. He encouraged everyone to stay away from degrading practices such as clickbait. Pope Leo instead encouraged the creation of a, quote, virtuous circle that benefits society as a whole. Beloved University of Loyola basketball fan Sister Jean Dolores Smith had died at 106 years old. Sister Jean was an avid fan of the Loyola men's basketball team, accompanying them to the Final Four in 2018 when she first became an internet sensation. As a sister of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, she served as an academic advisor to the basketball team, supporting and cheering them on with her motto, Worship, Work, Win. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night, and God bless.